Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Swedes 2, Turnips 1. This is the football podcast where veteran journalists from The Sun reveal all for your entertainment. Today, we're talking about football's big games and the trials and tribulations which come along with covering them. I'm your host, Reshmin Chowdhury, and today we have The Sun's head of sports, Sean Custis, and football writers Paul Jiggins and Andy Dillon. Gentlemen, let's start with a quick fire question, shall we, as always. How do we define a big game? Jiggo, going to start with you.
The big games are one you're sent to. I think obviously in the fixture list you've got Premier League one.
I should have sent them to Reading, Sheffield United.
Only I will say this because I once caught the ump that I was taking off what I thought was a big game and sent to Watford v Reading.
There you go, Reading.
However, that was a game of the ghost goal. If you remember when someone scored, Reading scored and didn't cross the line at all, didn't even go between the posts. And they gave it the goal, and so it then became the big story. So what you find, also having done a lot of lower league games, a cup sort of FA Cup drunk, and you sometimes go to what might not be traditionally seen as a big game, but it might be the biggest game in a club's history.
Yeah, very true.
That's what I meant by about the biggest game is the one you sent there.
No, I think you're right. I think the big game is down to the club more than you. I mean, I loved covering lower league football when I was a local reporter, and those games meant everything to the community, meant everything to the players, to the town. It might be a relegation clash, whatever, but it's who defines it as a big game. It's not always, you know, Chelsea v Arsenal, Chelsea v Liverpool. It can be top end of the conference. It can be, at the minute, my local side is involved in trying to get up from South Central, whatever, tier eight. And at the moment, they all feel like big games when we go and watch them. When I get the chance to go and watch them, fantastic fun.
As they say, every often, game is the final.
But often they're a lot better than the big build games. I remember, as Sean was saying, a couple of years back, I went to see Walton and Hersham play Molesey. I live in Molesey, and it's the local derby. Mm. And about 11 fans had walked up the 2 miles from Molesey to Walton and Hersham. And there was one stand, and then there was, you know, a low fence. But the fans had chosen to segregate themselves just to kind of create that atmosphere. And there were about half a dozen or a dozen, say, Molesey fans over by this little fence over the other side, all singing, you know, we hate Walton and we hate Walton. And then Molesey scored. And it was when smoke bombs were really popular. But they didn't have one. They had like an indoor firework. And they had it on the top of the fence post. And they lit this small indoor firework. And you could just see it.
Oh, bless them.
It was no more than cigarette smoke.
It's like even the smoke changes as you go down lower.
Yeah, that's what they're at the best. They're, you know, brilliant. It's when it matters, really.
What's at stake, isn't it?
The team I'm talking about is Ware, which is the town where I now live in. And I can't remember the team. It might have been Hendon or something the other week. And they brought along like a group of kids who I think were the players' children, stood behind the goal, and they brought along like kazoos and sort of rattles, and they never shut up the whole game. The crowd was about
vuvuzelas.
The
crowd was about 100, and this lot never stopped blowing the things from start to finish. We felt like, would you mind keeping it down, please? This is not. We don't do that sort of thing around here. God, the noise from it. The keeper was getting so fed up with them, but it was just funny.
The banner up, welcome to hell.
it is all about what's at stake, but there's so much at stake when it's a knockout game. What are your experiences of those types of games? Jiggo, you were at Ajax Tottenham, I believe, last year.
Yes.
And what a game. I mean, that's where your copy changes.
I was so pleased at the last minute. Dave Kidd was doing that.
Yeah, completely. What were you doing?
the quotes, which was great.
Pie watch.
I was on pie watch. Well, I was actually on beer watch near the end because at half time, 2-0 up, Ajax, so 3-0 up on aggregate, game looked dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, because of the number of press applications, number of journalists there, we were sitting among the home fans.
Mm. Oh, home fans, I see, were you?
Yeah, so you never have this, do you?
We do have to do this
sometimes.
Yeah, no, I don't at all.
You're helicoptered in.
Yeah, I know. In the middle of the
pitch. Players being fed quail's egg.
Who told you that? Yeah. How did you know?
You're on the pitch as the game's being played.
So we're sat in the stand and 2-0 up, and the home fans are obviously, you know, jubilant, and they're really patronised. Well, I'm still playing, still quite well, and that's what I said.
Yeah,
it's not over yet, you know. Ha ha. Mm. And then,
but it kind of was, wasn't it?
Yet, and then
it felt like it was over, yeah, but then.
And then when the, obviously Lucas Moore was last minute goal, and we all got covered in what I hope was beer. but I'm still not sure on this day.
I actually got sent to do England. Sean, you'll remember better than me. England had a few games with Turkey, didn't they?
Yeah.
10 or about a dozen. There was this kind of feud going on, wasn't it?
It was
kicked off in the tunnel and everything. And I think before, Turkey obviously had a reputation for being a bit aggressive.
Mm.
So I got sent to do Galatasaray.
What, the players or the fans?
Everything.
Really.
So I got sent to Istanbul to do the Istanbul derby between Galatasaray and Fenerbahce.
Ooh, and how was that? I would love
to go to that game.
I was
really disappointed.
Really?
Yeah. What?
God, with everything really you hear about that.
I don't know
that.
What I'm used to at West Ham, but it must, you know, they, it's one of those where...
At the London Stadium or Upton Park?
Yeah, not at the London Stadium, yeah. But they had the water cannons out, they had this, that, the other. But it was just, it was nothing what I'd expected. You know, I'd expected...
See, I'm expecting fireworks.
No.
Oh, when we went with England, we needed tin hats. Yeah. We had the riot shields up above us. People were pelting stuff on top of us.
I think I went to the game but couldn't get in that night. I had to watch it in town somewhere. Yeah, it was.
To be honest, every game in Turkey always seemed like a big one to me. It was just crazy. Yeah.
Well, that's what I would have
thought. You must have got the one duff on then.
But the Istanbul derby, yeah, it was. Mm. It was really. There was absolutely nothing. I was expecting rocks to be flying, but I think Galatasaray had just moved into the new. They'd had the old Olympic Stadium, if I think, if I'm right. And I think, as with most Olympic stadiums, it kills the atmosphere completely.
Yeah.
He says, get yes. his dig in. Yeah. And it killed it completely. And it was just vast, open, empty, and windblown, and nothing. The trouble is, what I don't think is, there weren't so many Fenerbahce fans. They don't travel like they do in England, which is that's why you get so many great games in England. No, I don't think anybody travels like the English fans, do they?
No.
On weekends, the whole country's being crisscrossed by thousands of supporters.
Yeah, I agree with you. And sometimes it's not about what happens on the pitch. It's about all the stories.
What happens off the pitch.
Absolutely. No, but it is. And England, Switzerland, what was this about a manager promising a cow some players?
I think, was it Kobe Kuhn was the Switzerland manager?
I think he was.
And what, how does this even work?
My job used to be covering the opposition. In England's big games,
right, okay.
Was always do the opposition in the build-up to try and get under the manager's skins, you know, and try and get something out of them. So being on the sun, you've got to try and dream up some idea. So let's try and, you know, it was the classic phrase on Sun Sport at the time, get him to say, if you can get him to say this.
And ring him up and get him to say
that. So in a roundabout way, we were actually sitting in the dressing rooms with the guy, and he was just doing a kind of a separate with the English press. And we managed to get him to say that if Switzerland beat England, every one of my players should be given a free cow.
How did you get him to say that? How do you get someone to say that?
I think I did the old classic. Well, I mumbled really quickly.
Cow.
Yeah. If Switzerland beat England, would you think your players deserve a free cow? And he says, sorry, yes, what? And it's
yes.
No, we kind of, you know, warmed him up, teased him around to it, and we actually got him to say, yeah, it would be great, and he was laughing and that sort of stuff. But the thing that I got the hump over was the fact that the next day we filed it and we had a little story in the Sun, but the Daily Mirror had a front page exclusive of it, and they didn't even have a reporter there. So it was just an agency, and I just saw one of their news reporters had a big banner, and they claimed it as their story. And as one of my assets is, I'm very defensive of what we do on Sun Sport.
I thought you might say that. Yes, I was expecting a reaction.
If I think we've done it, you know, it's our story, and we've, you know, it wasn't exclusive, but it certainly didn't belong to them, and it still grates on me today.
Yeah,
it's very minor, but it grates on me.
I was in Switzerland when
Sean needs to know how much I care about the podcast.
Yeah. Sean is learning every day.
I was in Switzerland before England played. I did their game on a Friday night against Australia, a friend, and I was just playing on the Monday. And on the Sunday, our Sunday paper broke the story of another episode with an escort girl or something.
Oh, right. Okay. So another
one. Given the task of going down to Basel and finding a brothel.
Okay.
On Sunday morning. So we knocked on the... went to this place. It was next to Basel Cathedral. Massive. Obviously, Switzerland, very Roman Catholic country. Basel, very Roman Catholic city. And the place was called Good Time Girls. So I took a picture of it outside.
Of course
it was. On the door, 10 o'clock in the morning, while everyone's going in next door for the church. And banging on the door. This bloke answered and I went, he said, we're not open yet. I said, no, I'm not worried about that. I just need to speak to someone. So I said,
I just want to talk.
Yeah. I just want to talk. So I said, right, have you got a price list? Right. And he handed me, he went, hang on, open the door, give me this price list. Door shut, and he opened the door and went, and no prompting, this was like I wanted him to say, but he went, half price. So I thought, great, that is
the
story.
That is the line.
Been promised it. I then turned around and was writing it down when a woman, a parishioner, and clearly one of the church wardens, ran out of the church and threw holy water over me and said, how dare you on a Sunday?
Did all smoke me.
Seriously?
No.
Oh, dear. Sean's just shaking his head in dismay. Yeah. Tell me about Kevin Keegan resigning after losing to Germany.
Well, there's really a whole series. We seem to play Germany every other month around 2000. And England actually, even though it was a bad European Championships, England actually beat Germany. I think it might have been Gerrard's debut. Anyway, 1-1-0, which was good. But then we had to play them in the World Cup qualifier.
Where it matters.
Where this is Wembley's last game. Tensions ratcheting up. I think it was the night before the programme that used to be on before what is now Sky Sunday Supplement used to be called Hold the Back Page. It used to go out on a Friday night. And the journalists on there that night absolutely tore into Kevin Keegan about the fact mainly that Gareth Southgate was playing in defensive central midfield rather than as a centre half. Absolutely tore into him. Keegan, it transpired, watched this. And he was absolutely fuming. He felt the journalists were disloyal. Mm. He felt that, you know, they weren't getting behind England. It was relayed back to us via the FA comms team that this was really hadn't gone down very well, etc. Anyway, so that particular game, England lose, obviously 1-0. And I don't know if you can remember the day, but Keegan resigns in the toilets, and it's raining, and Wembley has a firework display to mark the end of Wembley. It's not dark. Mm. The rain's coming down. We've lost 1-0 at home to Germany. And suddenly these fireworks start exploding in the air with virtually nobody left in the stadium. A manager resigning by the toilets.
Just the juxtaposition of the whole thing
incongruous.
Is just...
Firework display. So obviously we've lost that game. King resigns. We go on to Finland. So there's no manager. Mm. So somebody goes, we better give it to Howard Wilkinson. So Howard Wilkinson gets the job. And when we get to Finland, he's brought along a sort of team of like Stuart Pearce, who's there. And we're not quite sure why he's there. He said, is he here to play? Howard, he goes, you're joking. Have you seen him play recently? Well, what's he here to do? Well, he's come along as a bit of a coach. All right. Tony Adams, Martin Keown, they're all shaking their heads. And it was like I remember Robbie Fowler and Steve McManaman warming up with the touchline out in Finland and really not taking it very seriously. England was an absolute shambles.
Joke,
so we got from that, and then, of course, we come to play Germany again. And I always remember, so it's Germany away. This is, and by this time, Ericsson has taken over. And Steven Gerrard was put up, and he had a tackle with Dietmar Hamann, who obviously was his Liverpool teammate. Hamann had taken exception to this and didn't like the tackle. It had happened at the Euros, and we asked Gerrard about this tackle. He said, do you regret it? And he said, no. He squealed like a girl. So what? Ooh. Your own teammate? Yeah, he squealed like a girl.
Can I just say he probably shouldn't have made a comment like that. Just need a disclaimer.
So there's a German reporter next to us who hasn't quite heard this, and he says, what is this squirrel? And we've gone, he's gone, you what? Squirrel. He's gone, he squealed like a squirrel.
You're like, yeah, that
no,
was
no,
it.
No. So he squealed like a girl, and he's gone, eh? No, it's definitely not squirrel. It's girl. But then, of course, from that, obviously, within England press fact, it was like, it becomes squirrel, like a squirrel. And then, to round it off, we go and beat Germany 5-1, which is the greatest night I've ever had covering football. It was just a phenomenal evening. The picture of the scoreboard, it will live long in my memory.
Absolutely.
And it was a bit of a... For a while, it was good times for England. But the contrast, really, from... I also remember the contrast for me was those fireworks going off in the rain with Keegan resigned by the toilets to a picture of that scoreboard in Munich with Germany 1, England 5 on it. Amazing contrast.
And Michael Owen coming out with a match ball in a bin bag.
Did he?
Yeah,
did
I remember. He's had a black bin bag with a match ball in it. Yeah.
He hasn't nicked it, had he?
Almost poetic. Right, coming up, we will be recalling more big game experiences. We'll be back after this break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Swedes 2, Turnips 1. We're talking big games with Sean Custis, Paul Jiggins and Andy Dillon. Now, not every game can be a cup final, but it is worth remembering that big games are relative, as we were discussing at the top of this pod. Jiggo, tell me about your Road to Wembley feature.
We used to do, it used to be Wembley to Wembley. So we'd start off at, say, non-league Wembley, and they'd normally play in the extra qualifying round, and we'd go on. And so whoever won, we'd stick with them until they lost, and then we'd go with the team who won until they lost, all the way through as far as possible. Normally died a death around the quarterfinals because then all the big clubs have already done all the stories about the big clubs before. So one year, got Leamington, Midlands Southern Division 1, really early on. They played a team called Woodford Town from Northamptonshire, I remember, going up there. And it was like literally a rope around the pitch. And they, you know, all part-time players, no ex-pros, and they made it all the way to round one. And they played Colchester. So I live in Essex, and I got to know, having covered a few games in, I was getting to the stage where when I was going to Leamington, I'd go down and stay with the manager the night before, Jason Cannon, who was a top player.
Did you go and stay with him?
Yeah, because obviously Leamington's not a wealth of hotels or not of, you know, and we just become almost mates.
That's so nice.
So it was all good. So he said, oh, he couldn't do me a favour. I thought, great, this is where my career, this is my goodbye to Sunsport and my career
in
football.
That's where I get rich.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you go and scout Colchester for me? So I literally, we done it one Saturday for the paper and I went along as a spy. And then but I went and done properly like two games, midweek games and another Saturday game where, you know, I had all the dossier, all the scouting, like the pitch, the tactics board, the set pieces, biogs, the strengths and weaknesses on each player. This dossier was absolutely so forward, you know, it must have cost the company a fortune when I couldn't get to them. but it was all good, and I thought, great. So I went and did the game as well, and I thought, God, if they win, this is really like, this could be, it could be the start of something. Anyway, they lost 9-1, and my scouting days were over before they had begun. But the only good thing, the nice end to it was I was in the press box, and Jason Cannon came and got me out of the press box for the post-match lap of honour, or dishonour, as it probably was.
Oh, and you waved to the crowd, here's our scout, here's the man who calls
it.
He did all the hard work.
I'm a checkmate, anything to get on a football pitch.
Yeah, completely. I suppose, like, you know, when it comes towards the latter end of a season, it's all about sort of, you know, we just talk about the top end of the football leagues. What about the relegation battles?
Yeah, I mean, I loved covering lower league football. I really did enjoy it. And I had been at the Derby Evening Telegraph where I covered Derby County Reserves for my sins and Chesterfield and things like that. So I got a job as a reporter for a league club, Lincoln City, on the Lincolnshire Echo. Very excited about this. I remember I got it on the Friday, and on the Saturday, actually, Derby played Lincoln City. So it was before I left the Derby Telegraph. Derby won 7-0. So I am going, this is the club I'm going on to report, thinking, oh, great, I've got my first team. And it was just a relegation battle all season. It was in the third tier of football, the third division then. And it was a struggle and a struggle. Mm. And in those days, I don't know whether it still happens now, local reporters travelled on the team bus with the team, with the players, yeah, manager, played cards with them, talked to the manager, stopped off, had a meal with them, everything. And I remember we're going to Bristol Rovers away. This is the second last game of the season. They need, it depends on how the results were. Anyway, we go to Bristol Rovers and the build-up was massive in the town. Got to win, got to win, got to win. They've got Wolves in their last game, and Wolves are already relegated. So they play Bristol Rovers. It finishes 2-2, and various other games had gone on in the night, and nobody had worked out the ramifications. So we all get on the team bus, and it's left to me to work out what it all meant. Going through the table and all that, and I remember standing up on the bus saying, "Well, if you win, there is a slight chance you could stay up if you win the last game, but you've got to do it. It's got to be 17-0. 17-0 against Wolves. And on the last game of the season, Wolves were already down. This what says so much about Wolves as a big club. They were already relegated. They brought about 5,000 fans. So many fans. And Lincoln scored after about 2 minutes. We're 1-0 up. We've got 16 to go. Sadly, lost 3-2. It was... So a very sad occasion. And the following season, they went out the league completely. So it was... I'd left by then, though. Couldn't take it anymore.
Those are huge games. But what about some of the clubs we don't often associate with Europe? Andy, Millwall's only UEFA Cup tie, and I want to be able to pronounce this, but I don't even know which country it's from.
Ferencváros.
Oh, I didn't do too well.
They're a rough old club. Ferencváros.
Because that's a huge game. How many Millwall fans have travelled, do you know?
They were limited to 1,600 tickets by UEFA.
I
think they were limited to 1,600 tickets by UEFA, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yes, indeed. No, and your memory being the voice in your ear coming from your right. Yeah.
And, of course, I'm a West Ham supporter, but I've always had I quite like Millwall. And, you know, my granddad was a Millwall supporter as well. And I got, I don't know how I got
that on. Please put that on. He's going to get slaughtered.
Yeah, no, please edit that out, because I'll get caned. I got assigned to their trip, and at the time they had their very colourful chairman was Theo Pafitis of Dragon's Den fame, and he was great, but he knew I supported West Ham,
right?
So because I remember one night I came away from the new den, and I had an old Vespa at the time, and I'm like, it's the A2, isn't it, that just goes you go down
to the Old Kent Road,
that's it. Anyway, I'm at these lights, and it's not a nice part of London, particularly if you're a West Ham supporter, even though nobody really knows it.
On a moped.
It's almost like you've got claret and blue.
Can they just tell?
It's not a moped, it's a scooter. Okay, so I'm at the lights.
A Vespa is a scooter.
I'm at the lights after this night game, and I'm just ticking over, waiting for it to go green. This car pulls up on my left-hand side, window comes down, and I'm just standing there, and I just suddenly hear this bloke go, West Ham scum. And I thought, how has anybody recognised me here?
Who was it?
So I just keep looking ahead, because I'm not going to give up anything. West Ham scumbag.
And this was a car. So
it was
you're
a car,
your,
yeah.
You're
dark inside.
Sort of,
really, really rainy, horrible night.
Yeah, no, you don't want to get
involved
in that.
They always are around. There's never a nice evening, is there? West Ham scumbag. And eventually I just pluck up the courage, just as it goes orange. Look. And it's Theo Pafitis, chairman of Millwall, leading out.
Brilliant.
But following on from that, when I did the UEFA Cup game, I'm in the queue, the official flight out there, and I'm in the queue for checking in. And I'm in a queue, it must have been 200 strong, Millwall, all on the way out there. And he just does the same thing. He walked up to me, and as loud as he could, "What are you doing here, Dylan, you West Ham scumbag?" And at which point, 200 Millwall heads all turn around and clock me.
Did you squeal like a squirrel?
But that was where I found out.
Did
about
you dig a hole into the ground?
The Bermondsey Male Voice Choir. This is a group of Millwall fans. Mm-hmm. I think they're pretty law-abiding, aren't they?
Yeah, they are pretty law-abiding.
But when they try and go away...
Pauses.
When they try and go away, we can't get to no hotels, so we book ourselves in, or they put themselves in under Bermondsey Male Choir. For example, when we're going to Nottingham Forest this weekend, it's one of the weekends away, and because Jimmy Carr's playing in Nottingham, we're going as the Jimmy Carr Appreciation Society. 45 of us.
Because if you say there's 45 Millwall fans about... Actually,
and you can't put that out because... Don't be wrong. Run up the Friday, that's all right.
Yeah, and I remember going to Ferencváros, And there was a big banner, and it said, "Good luck, Lions," from the Bermondsey Male Voice Choir.
Oh, love it, love it, love it. God, big games. It is all relatives, isn't it? That is all we've got time for in this episode of Swedes 2, Turnips 1. My thanks, as always, to Sean, Paul and Andy. Look forward to having you on the pod soon, I'm sure. Remember to subscribe and review the pod at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Reshma Chowdhury. That is it from us. It's been a pleasure to have your company. We'll see you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.